our job is about trust, then skills. First, they have to trust you, otherwise your skill is nothing.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the Rhinoplasty Podcast with me, Dr. Cameron McIntosh. We're in season three, so we're doing live face-to-face interviews. We're in Verona at the European Academy's annual course, and I've managed to nail down a guy who I've been wanting to interview for quite a while, Serjan Gore. Welcome.
My pleasure, Cameron. Thanks for your invitation. And I was watching you and I was just making some, you know, trying to find some place here to speak to you about rhinoplasty in your channel. And it's my pleasure for this invitation.
No, dude, it's really, I mean, I so appreciate the time out of a busy schedule. So I want to kick it off, eh? So when I first wanted to go and learn from a master overseas, I picked up Sclafani's book on rhinoplasty and I found there was a guy in Izmir. And I thought, what a place. I'd love to go to Izmir. So this guy, Fazal Apaydin, then emailing me, invites me. And the day before I land, he asked me for my hotel booking. And I was like, he says, listen, Cameron, you're 500 kilometers away. I was like, oh, dear. But anyway, that's where it all started for me, in Izmir. And that's where you're based.
Yes, I am based in Izmir. I do my surgeries there. Sometimes live surgeries everywhere. But otherwise, I do my surgeries in Izmir. It's the third biggest city on the western coast.
Yeah.
It's a summer city, somehow hotter than the other part of Turkey, and 45 minutes flight from Istanbul. It's a huge city, actually, 4.5 million people.
Yeah, to me, it's like Cape Town.
Yeah, maybe it's similar. Yeah, I've never been to Cape Town yet, but maybe one day, why not?
So tell the listeners a little bit more about yourself. What was your journey to where you are now?
So let me start with Mr. Apaydin that you started with, because he's my senior professor. I'm also a professor in the same university, Ege University in Izmir. So everything started like with him, because he was the pioneer of rhinoplasty for years in Turkey and also in all over the world. And he was just a mentor for all of Turkish rhinoplasty society. And it's my chance that I started with the same facility to work with him and to work for him for years. And then I've been to, because, you know, in universities you have to do different things also. And besides facial plastics, I am doing like a rhinology. I'm a rhinologist also in the university. So I went to Pittsburgh for cranial-based surgery with for some observatory and fellowships, and then came back. So I do cranial-based, I do sinus surgeries, and I do cancers of rhinology. And at the same time, facial plastics. This is my work point and in Izmir. But in private, mostly I'm doing like facial plastics and rhinoplasty.
Yes, bro. And where do you find time for your social life and your family?
This is a good question for many doctors, actually. Maybe I can ask the same thing to you in return. But generally speaking, our job is we're working with people. So you have to give time, sometimes extra time to your patients, not just about the surgeries, before and after the surgeries. Our job is about the trust. And so we have to establish a good relationship with the patients, future patients, and some of them doesn't come, you know, just give time. This works like that. And my patients are mostly all over the world. And so they have to trust you more, you know, they don't see you in person. The video calls, you give time, but still they want to see you're a real person, you have a family, you have a child, and you are based in a city and working properly. And we try to show it through the social media and through the friends, and many friends are also helping to each other, you know.
Yeah.
They ask me, who am I going to go? And in South Africa, I say Cameron, but you, for example, same thing, if someone asks who is good in Izmir, you give my name. So when you trust...
Yeah.
And we just support each other. And so it started like that. And now for the family, thank God I have just one child. And my wife is also a gynecologist. And so she understands me. And so I think I can give proper, at least a high quality time to my family. But not like it's impossible to give hours and hours and everything.
Yeah, but sure, but it's also you got to, I mean, you're providing for your family at the same time, you know?
Yeah, sure. And so if we don't do this job, we cannot feel competent, you know? Yeah. So we feel competent and we can give to the family. Otherwise, it's impossible.
So now there's a question about, like, so you, as a professor at the university, you're also running a bit of a private practice, yeah, as well. But you're also quite involved with teaching and courses, etc.
Yes, exactly. So I'm teaching in the university lecturing. I am also taking fellowships from... Yeah. Different countries, the young doctors, let's say.
So there are people all around the world who listen to this podcast. Yes. Is that open for these kind of people who are listening, if they can come and visit you, or
yes,
how does that
exactly
work?
Exactly. And it works like that. They reach to me. Generally, I use my own social media, and okay, and they can find my phone number from friends. They directly contact me. Well, we have a coordinator for that. There are two ways to do it. If they want to do it properly with private and with the university, We have some paperwork for this.
Sure.
Because it's a official university thing, and so private and university is little more paperwork, but we have a coordination center for this in the university. It's easy. But for private, just to come and visit private, it's easier. I get the permissions from the private hospital, and then my coordinator arranges everything. We help out for everyone to feel confident.
And how many people do you have visiting on average?
So I have a lot of long-term visitors in the university.
Yeah.
They're always with me and Fazlı, Mr. Apaydın. And also I accept every week just one visitor, because in the university and in the private, the rooms, you cannot put like five people at the same time. Because I do a job which is revision rhinoplasty and many surgery failures. So my patients sometimes concern about the people inside the rooms. Actually, there is no restrictions for that. And like, for example, in the university, there are residents, they can come in and go out. And for anesthesia also, there is students around, go in and out. There is no rules for that much people can come in and out. But there are rules for when you want to go inside, you have to obey the rules, just masking and caps and everything. But I don't want like more than few people to be in the operating room. Then because when I'm just doing the surgeries, I cannot talk in person, you know. So it's more than few people. It's not something as good.
So, surgeon, one of the things I think being in Izmir, you've kind of managed to bypass is in Istanbul itself, there are quite a few really big rhinoplasty surgeons. So they're friends, but they're kind of like, there's a bit of a competition. Do you have something similar in Izmir or not really?
Sure. Izmir is a big city and there are very good surgeons. And so basically I can tell you the difference in Turkey than other countries is we are giving support to young doctors. You know this very well.
Absolutely.
Mostly for free. So for years we did this. So that much good surgeons are emerged in Turkey. So Turkey became a capital of rhinoplasty. I don't say everything is good, but this is about teaching.
Yes.
And so I can assure you that there is a lot of good surgeons also in my city, but not everything is about being a competent surgeon. It's about experience, which never comes fast. So when you're, for example, when you're going to buy a car, it's not about the money. Mostly you ask how many years, like 1 year a brand, if it's a car, you concern. If it's a good car, yes, it takes time to people trust that car. But it's something like that. I'm 45 years old. I'm still trying to build my business and make my patients and friends and doctors trust me. But you can find very good and experienced doctors in Israel.
Yeah, sure. But it's... I'm flummoxed by some of these answers. It's great. I mean, the depth of your wisdom at 45 is great, eh?
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm impressed, Bru.
It's reassuring.
Okay, talk to me a little bit about... the other ENT stuff, like skull-based surgery, etc.?
Yes, I do a lot of skull-based surgery. I'm a very well-known skull-based surgeon, actually, in Turkey. I work with many neurosurgeons. First, in the university, we started the endoscopic cranial-based center, and we worked a lot. Then I just reduced a little bit because I have some juniors working with me, like another associate professor right now, Dr. Göksel Turhal, and we're working together, you know, as a center. And then I've been to Pittsburgh for some education about cranial-based surgeries. We do cranial-based tumors mostly. For sure, you know, the biggest amount is the pituitary tumors, but every stuff, and also the sinus diseases we treat. And also we do a lot of research and like phase 3 studies and everything about sinus diseases, inflammatory sinus diseases, I mean, and also some malignant tumors in the university. We collaborate with the like big companies in the world, you know, those kind of studies. And so so it's my work is somehow with endoscopes and with face outside, but it's, for me, it's not a separating the things. It's, for me, a collaboration of those things. For example, it makes me more comfortable in heart revisions, like, for example, using the flaps inside to bring the blood to the caudal septum and also to close the septum perforations at the same time.
Yeah.
And use the endoscopes to get the breathing on a better way. So I take it as an advantage for function and beauty. But you know, it's not affecting my face surgeries also. Yeah. But making them.
So tell me a bit more about your approach to septal perforation repairs.
Sure, septum perforations are generally, you know, due to sometimes cocaine abuse, sometimes due to bad surgeries. The problem with the cocaine abuse is it makes a perforation, but surrounding mucosa is not good also. So it's makes the abuse makes the cartilage very weak. So you have to like do proper mostly, if even they are primary, go with the rib cartilage and do the stuff like that. For like surgical perforations, they're more posteriorly based. It depends if you want to just close it or not. But anterior-based perforations, they cause crusting, bad smell, bleeding,
yeah,
or the sound, you know, the voice, yeah, when people, yeah, are breathing. It's very annoying. And it affects the socializing of people. I do it in the same session. So I do the flaps first. Generally, I use both sides flaps. For big perforations, small ones can handle without the flaps, you know already. But what I use generally, if I use one side, like the sphenopalatine artery based posterior pedicle flap on one side, the base of the nose, to be able to prevent the complications of the donor side, I use anterior ethmoid artery based flap on the other side. So The naked cartilage is not the same. One naked cartilage is in the posterior of back of the perforation. The other naked cartilage is superior back of the So generally, I use both flaps, and one flap is aligned like horizontally. The other flap is aligned vertically. So generally, they're much better for big perforations to close by two flaps.
Another question, how diverse is the patient population that you operating in Izmir?
Patient population is all over the world. I told you, black people. I have patients from Australia. I have patients from Mauritius Island, for example. I have patients from India. I have patients from Korea. I have patients from Indonesia. But my biggest countries, if you ask, where do they come? For sure, 20% is from Turkey, and United Kingdom may be the second, and US the third, and Bulgaria the fourth, I think. So, wow. But every country we have patients. Not so much South American patients that I have, but Europe and US is the working horse.
That's cool, eh? Yeah. Wow. And Okay, so how does it work with, what's the process? If a patient like reaches out to you, how do they end up actually getting in on the OR, on the bed?
Okay, so how do they reach to me?
Yes.
There are two ways. The first one and the best one is the word of mouth. And so if you make someone happy and they send their like son, friends, neighbors, and this is the best way that you can build your business. You can rely on that. You can trust. The second one is social media that you cannot trust. But because this is sometimes hype, many people reach you. But if they see one bad result or they don't like it, let's say, they go away, they fear. I think this is not something you can trust all the way. You can make it much better for your business, but you cannot trust it in this marathon.
Yes.
So for me to make someone happy properly, do the nose or whatever, and then respectfully, honestly tell everything, because our job is about trust, then skills. First, they have to trust you, otherwise your skill is nothing. So I want to build the trust and I want to use my skills and improve it also. And they reach me out through the social media, or they reach me through my patients or friends like your doctors. They recommend, because I do a niche job, which is like closed lip revisions. Not everyone is insisting on that. For years and years I'm doing this. So some patients, multiple revisions, which always concerned about the necrosis of the skin in their mind, they may want a closed approach. And some doctors say, like, don't let your nose open again. But this is something, don't get any more surgeries. But the patient is not happy when they get this like this. Okay, don't open this nose, make it in closed surgery. So it's a selling point, actually, to do, to be one of the very few guys, I don't know, who is insisting on rib revisions in every multiple revision cases and doing it in closed. I don't know too many people. It's a selling point, but at the same time, you do it, you increase your experience, and you understand there are some advantages and disadvantages also of the surgery. And so now I'm building it for years and years I'm doing. So for example, for the columella, it's very safe. And you use the scar tissue, you don't open it again, you can lengthen, you can give back the columella much easier compared to an open surgery. But it's sometimes tricky to do it, to put stitches on top of the nose in contracted skin patients, small nostril patients. But, you know, you build your own experience and then you learn how to do it. You change, it's completely different way of doing things compared to open surgeries. I was an open surgeon for 8 years.
But surgeon, that's fascinating. I mean, we've had like 100 interviews on the podcast. I've yet to meet somebody who says they do closed revision cases with rib.
Yes, every time.
So when did, what happened? How did you change your, tell us about
that. Interesting story. My wife will get laughed for this. Okay, my wife had a surgery when we were in the university, okay, like 20-something years before. And a professor, and on those times it was a Joseph rhinoplasty. Then she couldn't breathe.
Okay.
And then 16 years, she said, I need a revision, but I don't want it with you right now. And then one day she said, next week, I want a surgery with your revision rhinoplasty. I said, okay, why not? In 2018 or something, 17, I think. And she had a closed Joseph rhinoplasty. I said that, okay, I'm going to try it in closed also a revision. I'm not going to open it. I'm going to see, because I was figuring out what she had. And then I did in a closed approach.
The rib lost.
Yeah, no, without the rib.
Without rib.
Because it was a Joseph, it was a tension nose, there was a huge amount of septum inside.
Oh, brilliant.
And it wasn't a saddle nose. It was pinch tip, malposition of cartilages, you know, it's tricky. And so, and she, like, felt so good. She became very good, very earlier than expected. She's working as a gynecologist. And she said, hey, why don't you do it to everyone? Closed surgeries. And I said, I know, okay, I'm going to try, because on those times...
What is her name?
Funda.
You must call this the Funda approach.
Funda approach. Yes, exactly. And then I started to do it for several cases.
Yeah.
In the first, it was like 6-8 hours, let me tell you the truth. Every stitch that I tried to put on, it was like 3 times, 4 times I was trying. And then I learned something. You should use your retractors as a like confronting to your needles, okay? You should use your instruments, not give it to the nurse.
Yeah.
And then it changed everything. I mean, I'm doing it at the retractor one hand and putting stitches on top. You start to deal it differently. So, and your nurse learns it how to help you. And then now they're average 4 and 5 hours, even with the whole details. So nowadays I'm better. I did maybe more than just rib revisions. I say more than 1,000 closed rib revisions last 3 and 3.5 years or something.
I think I'm going to just leave it right there. You guys must ponder that, eh? See who else is going to be doing. I'd love to put a poll out there. No, how many guys have done closed rib revisions? China, there's not many, eh?
I know Eren Abi, Eren Taşdan is doing sometimes closed revisions and many other, like Göksel maybe. But the thing is, not everyone is doing it and closed approach in every surgeries. I think they select patients. Maybe it's more, it's better.
Yeah.
I don't know. But for me, now I feel very comfortable in closed approach in many things.
Surgeon Bu, it's lovely to chat to you. This chilled eye guy, he's had a lovely time in Verona, been to Lake Guardia.
Pleasure to speak to you.
Thank you so much for taking time out to chat to us.
My pleasure.
Guys, come back next week again, eh? For those of you who are only listening to this on a podcast platform, please try and reach out and get onto YouTube, because on our YouTube channel, we've got some really cool clips where I interview the guests. We'll be right back.